Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for tuning in to Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that is solely dedicated to the multifamily industry. I'm your host, Paul Marks. We have a great show with wonderful guests who are experts on today's topic, and we are going to be discussing the topic of the importance of having a professional code of ethics. Joining me in the studio is a multifamily industry legend, David Hargrove, CPM, COO of Asset Living, as well as Kathy Maxey, CPM, and is Southwest Regional Manager for RCMI, Robert Lopes, CPM, who is the CEO of Relic Realty, and Jody Miller, Executive Director for IREM Houston. Welcome, everybody, and thanks for joining in.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Jody, we were talking about the topic of a professional code of ethics, because that's such a strong part of what IREM teaches to all the people that get educated through IREM. And I did mention that the three panelists who are professionals in the multifamily industry all have their CPMs. And David, I'm going to throw the first question to you. You've had your CPM for some time. What was it that motivated you at the time to go for that designation?
Well, Paul, I'd been in the mortgage banking industry for 10 years, and then the principal of that firm left to start a management company, at the time Greystone Asset Management, and he had invited me to join them and to operate their management company, which I, you know, other than the financial side of it, didn't really know too much about the you know, the day-to-day operation side, and I needed some background and some education that would, you know, advance me in that area, including certainly the ethics part, but, you know, also the operational issues that you have to deal with day in and day out. So that really motivated me to get involved with IREM and to ultimately wind up getting my CPM designation, and I think it certainly paid off over the years.
And Robert, you most recently got your CPM designation. I know prior to the show you were talking about some of the instances where you have seen where a code of ethics is a very important thing. And it all has to do with reputation. What have you seen and what motivated you?
I think I was motivated by, you know, I was a member of associations and, you know, wanted to be a part of IREM, and I've seen people like Kathy and David that had theirs well before me, and you know, people worth following, and you know, the mentors and people have like accomplished great things before. I noticed that it was one of the common things that they had. They all had, you know, some designation or followed, were a member of some organization that had a strong code of ethics. So for me, it was important to align myself with the right people and get on the right side of the fence with them. And then, you know, and following their footsteps, there's no need to reinvent the wheel. They've already kind of laid a path for us. So,
well, and when this code of ethics that IREM has, which is a very specific code of ethics, and maybe at the end, in the final segment, Jody, you can tell people how they can have access to get a copy of it. But the that was the code of ethics was in place long before social media came about. We're going to talk some about social media, but what was it that was so important about having that code of ethics? Just your opinions. You all weren't in the room when it was developed back, you know, 70 years ago or however long it was. But what in your opinion, what was some of the driving forces without the social media component? What were some of the issues that potentially were occurring back in the days when they developed this code of ethics?
Well, Paul, I would say that I wanted to be a leader in the industry. And just as Robert said, there were icons in the industry like David Hargrove and Stacy Hunt and you and Philip Schneido. You had these icons in the industry. And again, why did we reinvent the wheel? I wanted to be part of that leadership group. I wanted to follow them. I wanted to grow. And for me, the code of ethics drills deep. And I do hold to that standard day in and day out. And there are times in our industry that we are faced with different scenarios, and at holding my CPM and my ARM, it was important to me to stay focused on the right road and be a part of that group. And it did afford me opportunities. I didn't go to college, so this was my avenue. And David, I've spent a majority of my career with David Hargrove, and he instilled that in us. We were, you know, with the Greystone Asset Management, we were part of that group, and he instilled those code of ethics in us. And he made sure that we followed that path to get the education. And I would just say that it's definitely instilled in my heart, and that's where I continue to forge my career.
Well, I think even going back further, Paul, way beyond me, IRM was formed in 1933. And one of the reasons it was formed was that the real estate industry at that point had grown significantly. There were a lot of absentee owners, both for commercial and multifamily properties. At the time, really, it was more commercial than multifamily. But, it was clear there was a need for a code of ethics that would, guide operations and guide companies as they were formed to manage these properties that were owned out of state, and the owners had to have something they could, count on, and something they could look at to know that the people they entrusted their real estate to were one, educated the industry, and two, had a code of ethics to go by.
Right. And the getting back to the fact that it's a credibility thing, when I'm at what you're describing, David, is a credibility thing, that they wanted to deal with someone who was credible. They wanted to deal with someone who had a reputation for doing things the proper way, and that's how it started. And I guess if it started in 1933, I'm not sure when the Code of Ethics was actually developed, but whenever it was developed, no one could foresee the social media, the technology that we have today, which is, I'm sure, added a different layer. And Kathy, you were talking a little bit about that before we started the show today, about some things you've seen that have made you kind of feel like the Code of Ethics needs to be instilled a little bit more in some people maybe who already had the education.
Right, Paul. I think we could have a whole segment on social media and digital preference or digital presence. It does hit the core. When you see someone post, these pages are not private. They are public pages. They may have private in the tagline, but they're not private. And the reality of it is that you look down that list and you can see that there's a group that have taken the Code of Ethics. And as an industry professional, we're expected to know the difference, and we should, and we are held to a higher standard, and we are the leaders in this industry. And it's important that we lead by example. We have, Jody had mentioned earlier that, in the next 4 years, we will see a shift. We'll see, some of our veterans that will be retiring, and those newbies that are coming in, we've got to make sure that we're leading the right direction. And those code of ethics hold to that core. And sometimes you have to take the high road. Sometimes you have to take the tough line. And sometimes you just have to say no and walk away. And sometimes you have to send a private message that says, was that really, did you hold yourself to the highest code of ethics when you posted that? So Paul, I think we could have a whole segment on social media and digital presence. It is here. And communication, we are now communicating in a digital world. It's, we're sitting here having a verbal conversation, but a lot of the conversations that are happening through online portals. They're happening through text message. They're happening through instant messenger. They're happening through Instagram. So I think we need to, at the end of the segment, Jody will talk about the class that IRM will be holding in June. And I would definitely encourage our industry professionals, if it's been a minute since you've taken the course, I would encourage you to sign up, take the course. Just a reminder, just get back in there and know that we do hold the highest core of code of ethics, and our owners, our colleagues, our bosses, they expect us to know the difference.
Right.
Well, I think on just to piggyback on that a little bit with the internet is just, I've had the benefit of starting my career and, excelling through it in the last decade. And that's really been about the real boon of social media and seeing the differences. Everything is, you know, before this code of ethics, it existed, but now everything has a huge spotlight on it and it's under a microscope, you know, big magnifying glass. If you can, you can have an opinion and it's just greater liability. And if you put it out there, it can be seen across the world, even though it's just me in Houston that made that comment. And it, you know, it has the reach if it's put in the right, if you're put it in the right place. So I think, you know, I think we have to think about everything we say, not just for ourselves, but for the people we represent.
Absolutely. That's good. I agree, Robert.
We're going to take a short break. We're going to be right back after these messages with more of this topic of the professional code of ethics. And you're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Tired of being burned by your carpet vendor? Nobody has you covered like Rasa Floors. They lead the industry with same-day service and cutting-edge technology, like their online ordering portal and mobile app, so you can place orders instantly. The professionals at Rasa Floors are the industry experts offering the hottest new styles of carpet and hard surfaces that will help you achieve your goals. Visit them on social media, watch their videos, and look for them at local trade shows. Rasa Floors will help you make ready your apartment homes for new residents. For more information, visit rasafloors.com.
Your property and liability insurance is one of your highest expenses. Put Ted W. Allen & Associates' 50-plus years of experience in multifamily insurance to work for you. If you have multiple properties on separate policies, you may qualify for a master policy, which can eliminate the need for multiple insurance renewals and provide you significantly lower premiums. Call Ted W. Allen & Associates at 281-378-7500. That's 281-378-7500. Or online at tedwallen.com.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220 for a free analysis of your property. That's E-Conserve at 713-662-3220.
Well, we're back and you're listening to Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing the topic of the importance of having a professional code of ethics. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me in the studio is David Hargrove, CPM, COO of Asset Living, as well as Kathy Maxey, CPM, and also Southwest Regional Supervisor for RCMI, Robert Lopes, CPM, CEO of Relic Realty, and Jody Miller, Executive Director of IREM. Before we get back into the conversation, I do want to remind our listeners, if you'd like to provide show topics, guest ideas, suggestions, or just listen to any archived episode of Multifamily Matters, you can go to our website, multifamilyradio.com. So we're talking about the professional code of ethics today, and specifically, we're talking about the IREM professional code of ethics. It consists of 14 different articles, and I just wanted to touch on them and give you guys a chance to talk a little bit about how you've been faced with, in your professional careers, faced with having to deal with something out of each article. The first one is loyalty to client, firm, and or employer. So who would like to say what that means to them and what they've come across?
Well, Paul, I can kind of speak to that a little bit. I mean, if you're going to work for a company or a firm or management group, you need to be loyal to that company. You don't want to be bad-mouthing the company kind of behind their back, so to speak, or saying things that could, you know, injure their reputation publicly. You've got to be careful about that. You need to be loyal to the person you're working to, far, rather. Likewise, if you've got a client, not all of them are great. You know, there are bad clients out there. But if you're going to work for a client, be loyal to that client. You don't want to say things that, you know, that could come back and bite you later on in a negative way. If you've got a problem or an issue with a client, go directly to them. And likewise, hopefully, if you're an employee of a company that you have some kind of grievance with, that you go directly to your employer and work it out between yourselves. Don't work it out in public or in some other kind of arena.
And the second article is confidentiality. And I mean, that seems like it would go without saying, but it obviously is something that is extremely important in the industry. Kathy, what have you come across with that?
No, exactly, Paul. And that piggyback off of David, it's you work for that firm and you have a code of ethics and you have a responsibility to hold the confidentiality of that client, that company, at the highest level. And sometimes you're faced in situations. I think we can look at, each of us can look at these articles and say, you know, at some point in our career, as a veteran in the career, we could say at some point we've been faced with at least one of these articles, and maybe more than once. And it is a tough line. And I would just say as you need to be confidential and hold the information that your company that you work for to the highest level. And it's not information to be shared. And I would just leave it at that. It's not right. Your company, there's dollars that go into producing, whether it's a simple form that you think you're just sharing with a friend, so to speak. Those are proprietary documents that are specific to that company and that organization.
And the third article is accounting and reporting, and that's something that is extremely important when you're dealing with owners that entrust you to manage their properties and their money.
I mean, I think one of the issues that comes up with accounting on occasion, fortunately it doesn't come up often, but you get a client who may want you to state things in your financial records that are incorrect or miscoded for different reasons, usually tax-related. And, you know, you can't do that. You've got to look down the road and say, you know, if I do that and it goes south, then it's not going to be good for me or for our company. So you have to take the high road and do things the right way, especially in accounting, where people rely on those records, whether it may be a purchaser of a property or whatever. You've got to have accurate information.
Okay. Protection of funds. I mean, that's I've heard some horror stories over the years of things that have happened, but that's a big one, I would think.
For me, I would jump in on this one to say it's all these deals for the most part are somebody's investment, whether it's crowdfunded in a group of people's investments pooled together, or if it's one person who's worked their whole life and saved up a bunch of money or has a ton of money to invest somewhere else. When you're entrusting somebody else to manage those funds. So if you think if you just gave $1 million to a stranger, what would they do? A lot of times, even when they're vetting, even through the vetting process, and you hire a management company, or even on our end from a management company to vet an ownership group, you don't know what their intentions are. You don't know what they're going to do with their funds, what they're telling the investors. So I think it's important that if you're a member of something like IREM and you've signed this code of ethics, that's sort of like just one marker to say that. Not so much a stamp of approval, but it just one more box that you can check to say that, all right, at least there's something that I can go back to in trusting these people to work with us and to handle these funds.
Article 5 is relations with other members of the profession.
I would just jump in and say, I think in our industry, or there's 10,000 plus members, and there's an old saying, we're each 7 degrees of separation, but I think we're all two. All know someone that knows someone, and gossip, that this is what this says to me, is when you weren't present or you heard something that someone did, or maybe if you saw it, then you have a responsibility to report it. But if you didn't see it and it's just gossip, be careful what you say, because that could damage someone's reputation in this industry. And for us, when you say Robert's name, or when you say David's name, or when you say my name, the hope is that behind our name is a strong reputation, and that people say, yes, that's someone that I would do business with. Yes, that's someone that I would entrust my asset with. That is someone that I could turn over my financial records to and feel confident about that. What you don't want to have happen is the he said, she said, or I thought this person said, or I heard that this person did this. Be very cautious in what you repeat and how you say it and who you say it to. You could damage someone's reputation without even knowing the true facts of what really took place. And on the flip side of that is if you do hear something, or if you see something, you have an obligation to report it.
Yes. And it goes back, I guess, to with the social media too, that we're talking about, is that it's easy. You think it's, you know, it's harmless. It's not a face-to-face discussion, but it can do some damage.
Lies are effective.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I also think to remain above it too. So even if you hear that, it's like, even if you hear something, or even if you are a party to something, if somebody says something about you, it's just to, you know, not to go down to that level. If you stand by the code of ethics, I was saying earlier, it's not just really about the articles on the paper. I mean, I think it's something within you and your morality and the way you operate. I don't think anyone seeks to violate one of these specifically. I think it's just themselves and the way they operate in general. So I think it's irresponsible to pass judgment on people and when it comes to something like that, you know, without actually vetting it and looking into it.
Okay. All right. We're going to cover contracts next. Contracts is Article 6.
I mean, the key, I think, with the contracts, and we use a lot of contracts, whether they're with management agreements between an owner and the management company, or, you know, vendor agreements between suppliers and vendors. But the key with contracts is to make sure they're clear, they're not ambiguous. You know, anytime you're using a contract, I would certainly advise you get an attorney involved, because there's a lot of legal issues that, quite frankly, I'm not sure I understand, and attorneys might. Hopefully they do. So, I mean, I think that's the key there. Just make sure you know, it's saying what you want to say clearly, and you're not trying to, you know, pull something over on somebody.
Right.
My most favorite people in the world are attorneys now.
We're going to cover number 7, but then we're going to take a break. But this is, I think, a big one, conflict of interest. That seems to potentially come up from time to time.
I think if you've got a situation where we'll kind of go back to the employee-employer relationship. I mean, if you're working for somebody doing a specific job, you don't want to go out, for example, and have a job on the side without your employer's knowledge and consent. That may be in conflict with what you're doing for the employer. It's a loyalty issue again, and it, you know, that can create some real, you know, serious issues when they have to make a hard decision.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's disclosure too. So the other thing is that, like, for example, during Harvey, I mean, I had no interest in being in the construction business, but then when we couldn't find contractors during that time frame, or we were getting price gouged, it was like, the idea came about and said, all right, let's form our own GC company. And, you know, we've seen other companies, large scale companies, have their partnership company that does construction. And so, you know, it was a benefit. But I think it's always, as long as everything is disclosed and the opportunity's there, and everything's represented between the parties involved.
Right.
And I think that's probably what's more critical.
And making sure that the moonlighting, we ask about the moonlighting, and like David said, and you said, you know, disclosure to the client that that's what you're doing, mm-hmm. so that they know. And then also not engaging in a contractor that you know doesn't have the owner's best interest at heart. That's the big thing. And making sure that there's not something for you, and that you didn't engage in that contract or that vendor because there's a kickback coming to you. And I think in our industry, it's you see a lot of vendors trying to give kickbacks back to
owners, management companies,
right.
Leasing staff, on-site employees, everybody.
You have to step away, and you have to hold the high road and say no, and you have to make the best decision for the client and for the property.
Okay, great. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Your property and liability insurance is one of your highest expenses. Put Ted W. Allen and Associates' 50-plus years of experience in multifamily insurance to work for you. If you have multiple properties on separate policies, you may qualify for a master policy, which can eliminate the need for multiple insurance renewals and provide you significantly lower premiums. Call Ted W. Allen & Associates at 281-378-7500. That's 281-378-7500. Or online at tedwallen.com.
Tired of being burned by your carpet vendor? Nobody has you covered like Rossa Floors. They lead the industry with same-day service and cutting-edge technology, like their online ordering portal and mobile app, so you can place orders instantly. The professionals at Rossa Floors are the industry experts offering the hottest new styles of carpet and hard surfaces that will help you achieve your goals. Visit them on social media, watch their videos, and look for them at local trade shows. Rossa Floors will help you make ready your apartment homes for new residents. For more information, visit rossafloors.com.
Well, we're back and you're listening to Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing the topic of the importance of having a professional code of ethics. I'm Paul Marks. Joining me in the studio is David Hargrove, CPM, COO of Asset Living, Kathy Maxey, CPM, Southwest Regional Supervisor for RCMI, Robert Lopes, CPM, CEO of Relic Realty, and Jody Milner, Executive Director of IREM Houston. I do want to take a moment to thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. EconServe, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S., Rossa Floors, the flooring professional advisor, specializing in make-ready replacement flooring from multifamily for the multifamily industry throughout Texas and Oklahoma. WaterLogic, the smarter way to water, providing professional irrigation water management. And Ted W. Allen & Associates, specializing in multifamily habitational insurance since 1967. Before we get back to moving forward on the code of ethics, I just want to go back to conflicts of interest, because during the break, Kathy, you had mentioned something that you'd come across that you've seen in the past. You mentioned apartment locators.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to just put it all in one bucket, right?
Sure.
Because I think that the main thing that we want to get out of this is that there are vendors out there that will say something for you, something for me. And those are the things that we need to be mindful of and just pay attention to. It's, you know, we all fall on hard times, and it's sometimes it's easy to say, you know, well, maybe just this one time, but that one time turns into the next time and the next time and the next time. And it could be the demise, and very strongly could be the demise of your career and reputation. So I would hold that, just close and near and dear, and don't accept that, you know, mm-hmm. and walk away and take that hard line from that.
Okay.
Take the high road.
All right. Let's go to number 8 of the articles, and that's managing the asset of the client. What does that mean to you guys?
Well, to me, I mean, you're being hired to operate a property for an owner who may be remote, may be located in a different state. I mean, they want you to run their asset the best way you can run it. Different, you know, there are different types of assets and different problems you're going to run into, but you're bound by this code of ethics to tell the owner what you're dealing with, you know, recommend to the owner what would make the property better. You know, they may or may not approve it to move forward, but they need to count on you to be able to know exactly where their property is physically and exactly where it is operationally month by month. And really day by day. So, I mean, the key is you just, you know, that's what you're hired to do, and you got to do the best job you can for the owner.
Okay.
Absolutely. When I'm taking on a portfolio, the first thing I do is you document. I walk the property and look for those exposure, the risk and liability, and report those things to the owner. They entrust us in managing their asset because, as David said, and I'm sure Robert will too, that some of our owners are remote, and they're expecting us to walk the assets, dig into the assets, and look for items that could be a potential exposure for them. And that, for me, it's documenting, doing that thorough property site inspection, and not only looking at the structural piece of the property, but also looking at your internal staff and making sure that you have the right pieces in play.
I think knowing the owner's goals for the asset as well is probably one of the bigger things too, just to make sure that there's not any miscommunications or misinterpretations of what that is, because I think we all have different sets of eyes and different experiences, and you know, the way we could all look at one asset and probably divvy it up different ways and figure out, you know, the best way to maximize it, and it'd all be totally different directions. So I think having an understanding in those and the whole partnership overall, whether it's, you know, the people on site or the ownership group itself or any of the partners involved, I think that's all critical.
And, you know, if you find a property that or an owner that won't do what's necessary to keep the property safe, and I mean safe from physical harm, people tripping, falling through balconies or off balconies, things like that, you may want to say no and mm-hmm. just not do the deal.
Right.
And say, look, we'll go to the next deal, and, you know, maybe the owner will be more responsible on that one.
Yeah. I mean, that's health safety issues are big things on properties these days.
Yeah, everyone can't manage they'll manage to their partnership groups, and you know, they may have, if you have a lot of investors, then you may feel more accountability to them, but it's bigger than just the numbers on the spreadsheet. I mean, there's liabilities on site, and you know, as companies, I think if we are on the ground and we are giving recommendations, and if it's not happening, like David said, you got to kind of make the decision if it's in your best interest at that point.
And it's our responsibility to tell the story. It's our responsibility to give the information, and what the owner chooses to do with it is up to them. But it's definitely up to us to give the information and give good information and give solutions and offer them the assistance that they need to manage the asset.
Okay. All right. Let's go to number 9, which is duty to former clients and former firms or employers.
I mean, I can answer this pretty quick. It's exactly like Article 1, except, you know, they're former clients or former residents or former whatever employees. I mean, just because, you know, something's happened in the past, maybe they've sold the asset and they're going down the road, you can't turn around and start talking negatively or inappropriately about, you know, that client or that resident or whatever it may be. You've got to, you know, maintain those professional relationship between the parties.
Okay. Let's go to Article 10, which is compliance with law and regulations. That kind of seems that it doesn't need to be stated, but I guess it really does.
Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the bigger reasons why I'm a member, because the laws change so quick and I could not keep up with everything. So it's, for me, it's, there's experts in place that track this, and then we have great sessions where they inform us of the things that are happening and what's coming around the corner. I mean, between elections and just, I mean, the different laws per state and city, there's so much. So I think, you know, the associations, IRM, the things that we're involved in, I think they do an excellent job in keeping us all informed.
And also, I think organizations like IRM and NAA and the National Multifamily Housing Council, they are also a lobbying source where they lobby for
absolutely
the things in the industry. And I know, I'm sure some of you, if not all of you, have been on trips to go to the legislatures and talk with them. And that's an important part of making sure the industry is not only informed, but also is represented, I guess.
Well, I would say it's very eye-opening, because I have been on the trips with IRM as well as HAA, and it is eye-opening. And there is a lot of behind-the-scenes work that is done that many of our industry professionals don't see. And there, you know, as Robert said, there's a lot going on behind the scenes. There's a lot of laws. The laws change frequently. And our owners and clients expect us to know when those changes happen. So the resources are there. But I commend those that go behind the scenes on a day-to-day basis to fight for what's right in the multifamily industry, also real estate as a whole. I commend those that do that behind the scenes. It's a lot of work that we don't see.
Yeah.
A lot of hours.
And I think just be involved whatever way you can. I mean, you can't do everything, but when there's a call to action for something, there's a vote coming up and they want your opinions, I think joining, you know, the political action committees or anything that kind of forces that issue. I mean, you're never going to be a victim of it if it changes, if you weren't involved with it. You need to be involved and kind of be ahead of that change and be with it. So I think we're in good hands with IRM.
Absolutely.
Article 11, again, to me, this seems like it's it's so elementary, but I guess it's not in today's times, equal opportunity.
Well, it kind of ties into the, you know, the prior article regarding following the laws and regulations and so forth. I mean, it's, you know, that the EEOC obviously is an important part of any industry, and you've got to make sure you're complying with the, you know, fair employment laws and are up to speed on those. And they change too.
So. Sure. And Article 12, duty to tenants and others.
I mean, that's sort of like Article 1, really, again. I mean, the tenants, you deal with a lot of personal information, financial information, contact information, and that material is not meant to be shared. So you've got to be very careful about the way you control that and store that information. You don't want to go into an office with a bunch of files laying around on a desk that anybody could pick up and review or get information and steal an identity or something like that. So you just have to be cautious about it. You have to make sure your staff understands the importance of it.
Or posting your comments or ideas and thoughts of a resident on social media. I think that's something that should definitely, I think that's something that's not common, that's not seen a lot or wasn't seen a lot in the past. And just maybe that's something, another line that should be added to this article.
I'm starting to see more of it, and it's really disturbing to me to see that. And when someone says something about it being unethical, then they're attacked. So it's just, that's what I said, Paul. I think we could have a whole section, whole segment on social media. And then tenants to others, as the duty to the tenants, as David said, you know, when you walk into a leasing office, and there's files sitting out there, and you have applications sitting out there, and you have all this information that is personal information about residents. And how do you store your dead files? Mm-hmm. Are you storing them properly? Are you destroying them properly? I mean, all of those things, you can't just throw these things away in the trash can. You need to make sure that you're shredding this information, that you understand that this information, you have a duty to protect your tenants, your employees, and your clients' information. So just simply putting this information in the trash can, it's not acceptable. And we need to watch, when we go into offices, make sure that you look at those things, and are they stored in a locked cabinet? Are they stored properly? And is that information held to the highest integrity?
And everything digital is digitally secured as well.
Yeah. Right. Do you have the right systems in place there as well?
All right. We are going to take a break and be back with our final segment of Multifamily Matters right after these messages. You are listening to Multifamily Matters because Multifamily Matters.
Tired of being burned by your carpet vendor? Nobody has you covered like Rasa Floors. They lead the industry with same-day service and cutting-edge technology, like their online ordering portal and mobile app, so you can place orders instantly. The professionals at Rasa Floors are the industry experts offering the hottest new styles of carpet and hard surfaces that will help you achieve your goals. Visit them on social media, watch their videos, and look for them at local trade shows. Rasa Floors will help you make ready your apartment homes for new residents. For more information, visit rasafloors.com.
Your property and liability insurance is one of your highest expenses. Put Ted W. Allen and Associates' 50-plus years of experience in multifamily insurance to work for you. If you have multiple properties on separate policies, you may qualify for a master policy, which can eliminate the need for multiple insurance renewals and provide you significantly lower premiums. Call Ted W. Allen and Associates at 281-378-7500. That's 281-378-7500. Or online at tedwallen.com.
Well, we are back with our final segment of Multifamily Matters, and we are discussing the topic, the importance of having a professional code of ethics. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me in the studio is David Hargrove, CPM, COO of Asset Living, Kathy Maxey, CPM, Southwest Regional Supervisor for RCMI, Robert Lope, CPM, CEO of Relic Realty, and Jody Miller, Executive Director of Irem Houston. We've been covering through these previous segments the 14 articles that make up the Irem Code of Professional Ethics. We got to number 12, and Article 13 is duty to report violations. What does that mean?
You know, as a member of the Institute, if you have a designation, it means if you see a violation, you're obligated to report it to the local chapter and then ultimately to go to the national chapter to be adjudicated. And, you know, they have a process you'd go through to hear the complaint. You know, the complainant would have an opportunity to defend him or herself and, you know, go down the road. If you're not a member, though, it's still important to report things that you see that you know are wrong to whoever you work for, or to your supervisor, so that they can take appropriate action. And that especially is true in the case of, you know, monetary misappropriation or a thing like that, where it could be a legal issue, actually.
Sure, sure.
Which I think is important, not only just as members, but just for our industry overall that we represent, we represent each other and, you know, to not give a bad stigma to what we're doing. I feel like we're like our own secret society, secret professional group. I didn't grow up wanting to work in multifamily, didn't know it existed this way. So it's like we have a duty to protect that by reporting anything that's wrong.
Okay.
No, I agree. You know, there's different, it would depend on what, if you are a member of an organization, then you would have that duty to report any violation. And if you're not, become a member. Or if you're seeing those things that are happening out there, and Jody will talk about a class that IRM is holding in June, I think that more, you know, I think Robert said earlier, it goes down to your core values. And so if you're seeing things happen in the industry, whichever industry you may be in, multifamily, commercial, real estate, or any other industry, get involved, become a member, and you learn and you take that education road and you lead by example. We do have, you know, we're encouraging membership, become part of the group, and then things will start becoming easier to you. You'll be able to make those decisions a little bit easier, and you won't feel like you're alone. When you see those things happen out there, you won't feel that sense of aloneness. You'll have someone that you can go to. You'll have a colleague. You'll have a mentor. And, you know, maybe it's something that you just need to talk about that you've seen out there. Definitely reach out to a mentor in the industry and ask for guidance.
Okay. The last article, Article 14, is titled Enforcement. Kind of seems like it goes with 13, but does it mean something different than...
No, I think you're right, Paul. It does go with 13, and it describes how the IRM organization enforces violations, similar to what I said before. I mean, they take it up at the national level, and they hear the complaint. The complainant has an opportunity to defend themselves, and then there'll be a ruling. And you could be suspended for a period of time. You could lose your PIN. Or your membership, there's different levels of enforcement.
Okay. Well, I want to talk a little bit about IRM, Institute of Real Estate Management. It is a organization, David, you had mentioned was founded in 1933. I know people from around the country who are members of IRM and their chapters in different markets. I know that some of the chapters are more heavily weighted towards multifamily and some are more heavily weighted towards the commercial real estate side. Obviously, the ethics apply to anybody in the real estate industry. But IRM Houston chapter is run day-to-day by Jody Miller, who's here in the studio with us. Jody, tell us a little bit about IRM and multifamily and some of the involvement that you see from people over the years in multifamily. I will say one thing, and that is that everybody who's on the panel, every professional on the panel today is a certified property manager. They did get their CPM designation, which I realize is not an easy thing to do. But there are so many people I come across in multifamily who have their CPM designations. So obviously there's a value to it. Tell us a little bit about what you see.
Thank you. So in Houston, we have a membership of about 700 people. A fourth of that is multifamily professionals. I like to say it's the best of the best. We, just like the three on the panel today, everybody's well-known in the industry. A lot of them are high level. But you can start out at IRM just by taking classes and get familiar with the organization. Like Kathy said, get a mentor, and we offer scholarships. There's a lot of benefits to belonging, not just to IRM, to any association. If you're in the industry and professionalism and career growth is important to you, get out there in any organization. But IRM specifically, one of the cornerstones of our organization is ethics, and that's kind of why I thought this topic was important. You know, IRM was built 80 years ago on ethics, and here we are 80 years later, and ethics and your career reputation remains critical to your career.
And Kathy had mentioned that there was a class coming up for the ethics. When will that take place, and is there still time for people to sign up?
So I'll jump in on that. The class is offered once per year. We have it coming up June 7th, which is a Friday. It is a five-hour kind of interactive, fun class. We invite everyone to share stories that kind of go along with the lessons. It's being taught this year by Cheryl Green, who's from Camden. And if listeners want to register for the class, they can get $25 off by going to iramhouston.org, click on the Register for Ethics class, and use the coupon code RADIO, since you heard us here on Multifamily Matters, and you'll get $25 off plus a gift when you're in the class.
That's great. Other classes that you have, or if someone was interested in finding out more about getting a designation, there's a few designations that IRM offers that are specifically to the multifamily, or not specifically, but that are multifamily related. Robert, you've gotten all of them. You want to talk a little bit about those?
I guess in multifamily, it's easy to start with the accredited residential manager, start with the ARM. And then, in commercial, there's the ACOM. I started with my CPM first. And then as an organization, the biggest thing that I'm most proud of, aside from the CPM, is becoming an accredited management organization. So that's not just me, that is for my company. And then we also are happy to have two next-gen professionals going to do their CPM for this year. And, just promoting it through our organization, but ultimately just through the industry. I've been very fortunate to get many advantages and many opportunities just on the academics and the education alone. So I would encourage it to get involved and to do as much as possible.
Yeah, the AMO class, I think, is a really good introductory class. I'm sorry, not AMO, but
the ARM.
ARM, yes, that's what I was going to say, I meant to say. I have taught that class for a number of years, and it covers a little bit of everything from leasing to, human relations to financial issues, and certainly touches on ethics. But it's a good course if you can find the time to do it. It's about a week-long course, I believe.
Yeah, that's where I started, early on in my career. I received my ARM, and then I received my CPM. And definitely that the education opportunities that were afforded to me and the knowledge, and it wasn't just multifamily. You receive the knowledge that the retail, the office, the industrial, all of those pieces are real estate. And it's very intriguing that, when you see that commercial building, pop up, you're going to see a multifamily. If you see a multifamily building, hit the ground, you'll see commercial hit the ground. So they're all intertwined. And to learn that the ARM focuses more on kind of the basics, and then just move forward through that CPM, and you'll learn the fiduciary responsibility to the client. You learn the goals and objectives of the client. You learn that next step on the risk and liability. You learn the financial side, and really focusing on turning these assets into golden opportunities. So I really hold that CPM dear to my heart. and I have really appreciated and the professional growth that I've received from IRM, and not only the professional, but also the personal growth.
Yeah, if you're going to be involved with this industry, it's important to get involved with a group like IRM. One, to network with other people and, see what other types of jobs may be out there, but two, to learn in advance. And if you can't really do it successfully on your own. There are people that have done it, but it's hard. So I think it's a great way to start out.
Okay.
The instructors are always phenomenal.
So we've got a couple of minutes left. I do want to ask everybody the question that I always ask, which is tell our listeners how you got started in the industry and if they wanted to contact you to find out more about you or ask questions about the show, how can they do that? You want to start out, Robert?
Yeah, I got started. Robert Lopes got started about 10 long years ago. And I've just kind of worked my way up and started my own company and with some partners. And we're about 5 years in. We are buying our own assets. And if you want to reach me, robert@relicrealty.com. Or if you're into social media, I'm on Facebook and Instagram at Relic, R-E-L-I-K underscore Rob.
Okay. David?
I'm David Hargrove, and I accidentally got into the business. Got out of school at the University of Texas at Austin. Wasn't sure what I was going to do, wound up in mortgage banking for 10 years, as I said a minute ago, and then went from there into property management and really have worked with the same group of people for 40 years.
Okay. Kathy?
So I, too, was in the industry accidentally. My sister is in the industry, and I just... In 1991, I was a senior in high school. I know. On the way over here, I thought, you know, am I really a veteran? I think I'm a veteran. What year is it that you become a veteran? Is it 10? Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, I have way surpassed that. Okay. So I started the industry in 1991 as a leasing consultant with Hedig Management with Darlene Guidry. And she took me under her wing. And that was exciting and learning. And I just... started the business just having, I needed a place to live. But you can reach me. I'm with RCMI, www.rcmi.com.
All right. And Jody, if someone has some questions about how to get involved in IREM, how do they reach you guys?
They can find us on all social media platforms as well as our website, iremhouston.org, or they can call the office at 713-783-9225.
Okay, great. Well, thank you guys for being here today. I think it was a very informative show that our listeners are going to get a lot out of. We're going to be back next Friday at the same time, 10 a.m. right here on 1110 a.m. KTEK. You've been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.